So let's begin. We're on Daf Mem Zayin Amud Beis, and we're here getting to a really, really interesting sugya. You know, the previous sugya is interesting if you like, you know, if you're a lamdan, but you don't have, I don't think the rabbis at KJ or the rabbis at Reinat Yisrael and Tinek had too many questions about Tevel and Maaser Rishon Shenit Latrumaso or Maaser Sheni that was or wasn't redeemed properly. Whereas I can mention one thing to you, one legend that you've probably heard, it will be familiar to you. It's not exactly an old wives' tale. It's generally regarded as wrong, but it has an old roots, which is a katan holding a sefer Torah in order to make a million. My favorite. It's a running joke I have with my wife, which was during the pandemic when we'll be waiting for our tent. She would say to me, if you want, I'll hold a sefer Torah. And I would say to her, we had this squirrel that used to attend our minyan fairly regularly. I would say, you know, we don't hold that way, but ironically, in our community, it would be less controversial if I gave the squirrel the sefer Torah and cast it in his defense, and I can't use the pen. But, you know, we weren't doing it with my wife, we weren't doing it with the squirrel, we weren't doing it with the katan, which is a case that's mentioned. It actually emerges from this sugya. There's nobody, at least obviously to me, I apologize if I'm missing anybody's Sephardi heritage, at least according to the Shulchan Aruch, I know I'm jumping to the end, the Sephardim I think would include, not for Tefillah, but for Zimun, they would include a katan, a boy once he reaches the age where he understands to whom he is a blessing, so it might be 7, 8, 9, 10, they would count them towards a Zimun, both a 3 and a 10, that's the Pesach and the Mechaber. It's not what the Ramah holds. But we tend to, the bottom line for Tefillah, I'm sorry to give the bottom line first, is that in order to have a minyan, we require 10 males above the age of 13. But the possibility of...
Does that apply for Kriyas HaTorah also?
Oh, so that, again, Lamaisa, we require 10, the answer is yes. For the minyan of Kriyas HaTorah.
Right.
The Svardim will allow a katan, I know, to read Masir. They might even,
Aliyah.
Yeah, right.
Right. So, I think once three is
what they do? So again, we'll talk about some of that, but let's at least start with our Gemara as the primary locus of this discussion, and then things, you know,
could
go.
This is a new topic, yes.
Yes, we're done talking about, you know, what kinds of things. We're done mostly talking about the how you do Zimun and on what you do Zimun, and now we're going to talk about how many people you need for Zimun and what kind of people you need for that to be. So the Gemara that we're on is Daf Mem Zayin Amud Beis, and it is on the second of the widest lines. So the last block on the page, the second line, Nashim Avadim Uktanim Ein Mezamnin Aleihem. So that was the Piska, that was the lemma from the Mishnah, that women and slaves, an Eved here is an Eved Kinaani, not an Eved Ivri, Kitanim do not... Are not mitzdarfin. Now, a mezamin alein is the expression, which would mean that if you're to be mezamin on somebody, literal phrase means that to count them towards the requisite number of people. So, Amar Rabbi Yosei, katan hamutal ba'arisa mezamin alav. If you have a, and this is probably the correct iter of Asi, it's an Amora speaking. If you have a katan who is mutal barisa, you have an infant in the crib, he combines to make the minyan of 10. So you have, let's say, 9 men sitting around the table, and then you have the baby in their crib. Presumably it doesn't matter whether they're sleeping or they're awake, since it doesn't really make a difference to them. It's the presence of that asiri miyisrael, male, probably.
Male,
have a katan, yeah. What? Well, hold on. Yeah. And it's all it says. So, katan amuto barisa mizamnin alav. Now, right now it doesn't say anything about tefillah. It doesn't say a minyan per se, but it says that a katan is amuto barisa will mizamnin.
Just for 10?
Doesn't say. So now the Gemara asks, v'hatanan, nashim avadim katanim, ein mizamnin alehim. So the Mishnah says, you can't be mitzarif a katan, you can't include a katan in the requisite number of people. So the Gemara says, who the Amar ka Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi? He holds like Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. The Amar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, apal pi sha'amru katan hamuto ba'arisa, ein mizamnin alav, aval osin oso sinith la'asara. Now, it's not as explicit as you would like, given what the Gemara is trying to, the problem is trying to solve. But Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi says that a katan amuta barisa ein mizamin alav. You can't be mitzarishin towards the zeman, but you can make him a sniff la asara. The term sniff is like an appendage. When we talk in psak halacha, sometimes we have a particular shita that we say you can't rely upon it straight out, but you can use it as a sniff lahakel. You can use it as sort of an additional support in order to be lenient. So Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi says that you can make the katan a sniff la'asara. So what exactly, if your aim is amnolav, what does it mean to make him a sniff la'asara? So Rashi explains, I think everybody understands it. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi is saying that you cannot count a katan towards three, but you can count them towards ten. And almost all Rishonim, I think, the Balamor might have a funny idea here, but assume it means one katan. And that would be seen to emerge from the continuation of the Gemara. Now, lest this seems strange to you, the question is which has greater demands or requirements, three or ten? Because when we bench with ten, we have Zimun with ten, so we use Shem Hashem. So, for example, when you have a Zimun of women, if you have three women, they can, and many Rishonim hold must. That's not the minhag, must, but certainly it's laudatory they should make a Zimun. What about if they have ten? Well, they can still make a Zimun, but they're not maskir, they still don't say Elokim. Right? We require more in that context for the Zimun of Asara. But on the flip side, correct. That runs in the opposite direction of what's being suggested here. On the other hand, we do have situations where we're more flexible with 10 than with 3. It's going to come up in the next circuit. We're not going to get through it for a little bit. It's going to take us a little time to get through this. Where what happens if not everybody ate bread? Some people ate bread, some people didn't. So the halacha will be that when it comes to Zimun of Asara, as long as you have what's called a ruba deminkara, a very noticeable majority, which means 7. 6 is a majority, but it's not a ruba deminkara. It's not so obvious. So if you have 7 people who ate bread, and then 3 people who ate anything else, then you can make a zimun of asara. But when it comes to a zimun of 3, there are different shitos here. And I think the 2 primary shitos, I guess all 3 exist. Some say all 3 have to have eaten bread. Some say one of them, of the 3, could have eaten mizonos, and some say it doesn't matter what the 3rd person ate. I think our practice, my sense is generally, we require at least mizonos for the 3rd person. We don't require that by a zimun of 10. If one of the people sat and ate, you know, broccoli, okay, salad, you know, 3 of them ate salad, then that would be sufficient in order to make a zimun. So there we do have we are more flexible in terms of 10. There's another thing that will come up in this sugya as well, which we don't accept, but, you know, it's kind of funny where we're more flexible with 10. So here, what the Gemara is suggesting is that Rav Asi's position is that Rav Yeshua ben Levi, which is the Mishnah is talking about 3, so Nasha Vadakutanim Emezam Nalahim, but if you're talking about 10, so a katan, even if he's muto barisa, you can make him a sniff lasara. So you can have a zimun b'shem, you can have 10, even though the katan is obviously doesn't know what you're doing, who you're benching to, etc.
So if you can't, I understand you can't be telling yourself you answer.
So yeah, well, in any zimun, I thought we looked at this. Tosfos, I think it was in the Gemara, was in Tosfos, or is it later in the Perek? I don't remember. It's one of those things I always used to have on a card. Yeah, it was on Daf Mem Hamad Beis where if you ate anything, then you can say Baruch Shachal Mishalo, even though you're not one of the people's mitzvah to the zimun. You can, and you do. If you didn't eat anything, and they're doing so they're blessing God. You say, so what do? So you respond, Yishem Hashem Arach, you respond like everybody else. And when they say, Baruch Shachal Mishalo, you say, Baruch Hu Mavarach Shemo Tamid Olam Vayad. Tosus quotes that, I'm going to see if there's an inundation. Baruch Hu Mavarach Shemo Tamid Olam Vayad. Some don't have the who in there.
So for the last night of Tosh, I never had anything of Tosh for this. I have a glass of water.
Right.
I don't respond when they die.
So when if you drank a glass of water,
okay.
You should respond. You should respond, Baruch Shachal Mishalo. If you don't have anything, then you say, Baruch Mavarach Shemo Tamid Olam Vayad. Yeah, it's in Daf Mem Hamad Beis. You have to check with them. It probably says it like in the art school sitter. You know, there are
most benchers don't have it.
So I was wrong, and
yes,
I didn't say anything.
That is true.
Out. I go to the shul and I wait for my...
No, so if you drank anything, you should respond with the regular bar soap flow.
Then I still have something.
You still have something to respond, yes. The, when I got married a long time ago, so I had one thing that I wanted in my denture, which was, if you forget to say Ritzei or Yalla V'yav on Yom Tov, there's a little bracha that you make, as long as you haven't started the fourth bracha. So I guess I'm betraying something about myself. Despite any kavana I aspire to have, there are plenty of times that it's Shabbos. And oops, yes. And so my wedding venture has that. So this is another very, it's like one of those things, the gabayim have to know what to do when there's a mistake in the sefer. They need that on a little card. And this is one of those things, you know, a few things for benching that are not your regular benching, even if you know Berachas Hamazon and Palpeh, but these are things that you don't know. So it's very good to have in hand. Anyway, it's the Gemara Mehemet Beis, and you call it the Tosas quotes the version of Alach Skadels. Check what it says in Shulchan Aruch, we'll have the final Nusach. But that's approximately what it is. Baruch u'Baruch Shmo Tamei V'Labayit. And I think if they bezamein b'shem, you say Baruch Elokeinu u'Baruch Shmo Tamei V'Labayit, or something like that. But it, look what it says in Shulchan Aruch. Yeah. So, okay. So, bottom line, at least so far, is Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi says, and the Gemara is assuming there's no machlokas between him and the Mishnah. Katan is not mitzdari for three, or at least a katan amuto barisa. I don't know about a katan. He is, even though he's totally out of it, doesn't know what's going on, he's sitting there in his crib. There are at least nine men above the age of 13 at the table, so you make a zimun b'shem. Okay. So now, the Gemara continues. And
the katan, you don't know it's X right now.
I assume it's male. That's my guess. But it's not explicitly clear. If you would assume that the katan would be, even if it was a girl, then presumably an adult woman should count just as much. I don't, for these purposes, I don't mean not count, I understand. But I don't think we say that an Isha is a tenth. That never comes up in anything that I've seen, that an Isha counts as a tenth. So I assume it has to be a male katan on the assumption that eventually he will be high of the davar. That's my assumption. Okay, so now the Gemara says the following. The Amar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Tisha ve'eved mitzdarfin. So that's kind of interesting. And again, I would have thought that an Isha should be as well. And Eved Kanani, again, he could eventually be Bochametzis if he's freed, but he doesn't have more mitzvahs than an Isha does. So, but he never talks about that, Tisha ve'isha. I don't know why, but he doesn't. So he says Tisha V'Eved Mitzdarfin. And ultimately, we don't pass them this way, so it won't matter. But he says Tisha and an Eved Kanani is the tenth on Mitzdarfin. So Meisvei, the Gemara says Haka Debi Masa Rabbi Eliezer Shenichlas LeBeis HaKnesas V'Lo Matza Asara. So Rabbi Eliezer entered Shul, and there weren't 10 people then. And right now, the Gemara thinks that there were 9. So what did he do to make a minion? V'Shifrer Avdo V'Hishlimo LaAsara. He had an Eved Kanani. We'll talk about this tomorrow, we'll talk about this in a second. He freed his Eved Kanani in order to make a minyan.
How do you know it's an Eved Kanani?
Because an Eved Ivri is a full Jew for all purposes. He just...
Yes.
An Eved Ivri essentially is a laborer who can't back out from his contract. One of the central principles of labor law and Torah, maybe the central principle, is that a worker is not an Eved. A worker, a poel chozer bo b'chatzi hayom. A poel can leave his job in the middle of the day. I mean, if he's causing a loss that day, whatever, there are certain cheshbonos, but fundamentally he has the right to leave a job at any point. Whereas an Eved Ivri doesn't. An Eved Ivri, once he is in the contract of Eved Ivri, he can't leave in that sense. But in terms of mitzvos, yeah, the only din that might be different by an Eved Ivri is that there's permission for him to sleep with the Shifra Kananis, but the master gives him to make more avodim. But other than that, all the other Taryag mitzvahs, he is exact same din as a regular free Jew. So it's an Eved Kanani. In general, when you say Isha Eved the Katan together, it means an Eved Kanani, because an Eved Kanani, based upon the Gzera Shava of La, has the same mitzvahs of an Isha. In other words, even though he's male, he's exempt from mitzvah sasashos man grama. Okay, so now the Gemara says, the Gemara makes an inference from the Braisa, shichrer in lo shichrer lo. Why did he have to free the Eved? If you said that Tisha ve'Eved amitzdarfim, so why do you have to free the Eved? Just drag him to shul, that's enough. So the Gemara says, no, trei etzdrichu. They were short a minion by two. And he had two servants, so shichrer chad v'nafet b'chad. So he one of them, he could be mitzdarf, but he couldn't do two. Therefore, he freed one of them. I don't know how he picked eeny, meeny, miny, mo. And that's how he had a minion. Okay.
He's a minion for davening, though, not.
Ah, yes, that would seem to be the case, because he entered the Beis HaKnesses, which suggests that the Gemara, even though this is not the way we handle it in Pesach, and that the Svaradim who are Mekel to allow a Katan to be part of a Zimun don't hold that way by a minion. Right, even though the Rishonim, the Rishonim point out that the Gemara is sort of putting the two together. Rabbi Shuba Levi said Tisha Evan Mitzdarfin. He was talking about Zimun. Now the Gemara tries to bring a raya from the minion for Tfilah. It's, by the way, particularly interesting. Now that we mention this, I wish that your father-in-law were here, because he might have some recollection. Someone pointed out to me, David Benovitz. I don't think you know him. He's a retired actuary, now lives in Israel. His son is the one who runs NTSY Kola, Summer Kola. So he pointed out to me many years ago, and I think this is in the name of the Rav, that when the Gemara in Megillah goes through all the things that the Mishnah says you need a ten for, you need a minion for, so the Gemara lists Zimun, but most of the things that require a minion because it's Davar Shebekdusha, and it's Dashim B'Sof B'nei Yisrael. It's all learned from that, some double Gzeir Shava, which I think we did already at some point in the last op or so, a double Gzeir Shava that teaches you that in order to have Kedusha, the mitzvah Kiddush Hashem is Ba'asara Misra. Right? That was the general source. But when it comes to Birchas Hamazon and Zim Ba'asara, the Gemara doesn't say it's a Davash Kedusha. It says that because you're mentioning Shem Shmaya, Lav Orach Ara, with less than 10. It's just not there, Harit, to mention God's name. Which is interesting because it suggests it's not really a Davash Kedusha. Which could explain, ultimately, Lamaskana, why the Svarti practice would be to distinguish between Tvila and Birchas HaMazon. In Zimun, they might allow a Katami Mitzarev, whereas Tvila, the Mechaber, does not. But at least right now in the Gemara seems to be equating the two. That it's asking a question from a Tvila situation, which you could have dismissed and just said, yeah, by Tvila he freed him, because he had to free him, because by Tvila you can't count an Evet. But that's not what the Gemara said. The Gemara said he freed one, but they were short too, so he freed one slave and he was yotze with the other slave. He obviously was. He really wanted Avodah Mitzvah. We should all. No one's asking us. Lenny, not necessarily for you to free your Avodah Mitzvah to make a million, but you know, obviously, he thought they're very important. It's interesting also because something we explored a long time ago, and we'll see, the Gemara is going to talk about it, being the importance of this mitzvah, being a mitzvah of the Rabbim. It might be that it's the Tzibor's mitzvah. Even though many Rishonim, and the simple reading of the Shulchan Aruch is that Tzibor is not obligatory, nonetheless, it's really important. It's really important. Okay, so now the Gemara asks a question. The Hechi Ovid Hachi, how is it possible that he freed his slave to make a minion? The Ha'amar Rav Yehuda, Kol Hamishakver Avdo Over Va'aseh. Rabbi Yehuda says that anybody who frees an Eved Kanani violates a positive commandment. Shenemar La'olam Bohem Ta'avodu. Now, a little bit of background here. This touches upon a number of issues. Firstly, this particular issue is a point of dispute in the Tanoim. There's a series of issues. Yeah, freeing one slave, whether there is a prohibition. And as the Torah says, you should enslave them, you should work with them forever, implying that you're not allowed to free them, because otherwise you would be violating La'olam Bahem Tavodim. So there is the Eved Kanani. Eved Kanani. An Eved Ivri goes free after 6 years. An Eved Ivri, even an Eved Kanani, by the way, can buy his freedom. When we say you may not free an Eved Kanani, it means only for nothing. If he somehow acquires money, someone gives him a gift with strings attached, where you, the owner, have no rights to that. You can do such a thing. You give it to Eved Kanani money on the condition that the owner has no rights to it, and he wants to redeem his bias freedom. You're allowed to do that. You just cannot free him for nothing. That is pure generosity of your heart. If you knock out his eye or his tooth or any one of those limbs, you have to free him. You have to free him. But just to free the Eved Kanani is prohibited. Now, this obviously raises, on a certain level, a kind of moral issues. Slavery, generally speaking, is not a good institution. Now, it happens to be. Slavery is a bad institution, full stop. Slavery in the Talmudic period was different than slavery in the last 800 years. Slavery in the last 800 years was fundamentally racial. It was a product of, I'll call it dehumanization, regarding certain races as being somehow less than human. That was certainly accompanied it. In the classical period, slavery was not at all racial. In fact, the term slave comes from Slav. They were not people of dark-colored skin. Basically, slavery in the Greco-Roman period was, if you lost in war, the side that lost got taken as captives, as slaves. It wasn't necessarily inherent in, we might say, inherent in the Gavra.
It's not like the transatlantic trade.
Well, correct. Although in some cases, again, there's not a defense of it. In many cases, you had tribes that fought, you know, that fought wars, and the losing tribe, the chief, you know, of the winning tribe, sold them into slavery to those people. So not everybody was. I'm not defending those cases. It wasn't. But it was slavery in the classical period. Not that it was a good thing. Chazal don't have a positive view of the institution. Marba avadim, marba gezel. Yeah, the more avad than you have, the more theft you have. It's economically, it's not a good institution either. There's no incentive for the slave to work. So it's been pointed out that indentured servitude is a much better economic institution than slavery, because an indentured servant has an incentive to work and produce so he can buy his freedom. But nonetheless, even though, so slavery certainly existed, I think most of us don't view it as a very positive institution. And yet it's a little jarring here. The Torah says, "Olam antavodinat." There are a number of issues. There are like at least three, maybe four issues. The Gemara in Sota quotes verses like this. I'll explain what I mean by that in a second. They quote verses like this, and they will cite a machlokas between Rabbi Yishmael and Rabbi Akiva, whether the Torah is commanding you to do something or it's allowing you to do something. So, for example, this one is striking because nobody would have thought this is a mitzvah, and it's not strictly obligatory, but it says that when a man, if a spirit of jealousy comes over him, v'kinei es ishto, at the end of the section that deals with the sota, with the woman who was suspected of adultery, at the end of the section, the Torah just summarizes and says, this is the rule of a situation where a man was overcome with jealousy, v'kinei es ishto, and she did commit adultery, and she didn't commit adultery. Now, you would have just said, v'kinei es ishto, and he warned his wife. And that's what Rabbi Yishmael says. If the man warned his wife, then you go through this whole process. Rabbi Akiva says, V'kinei es ishto is a mitzvah. Right? What we would have said was just a statement. The fact he says is a mitzvah. Ditto for this verse as well. La'ola ha'an tavodu. The context in which this verse occurs is where the Torah warns us about making it of overworking or mistreating an Eved Ivri. So the Torah says that you're not allowed to work with an Eved Ivri, avodas parah, really backbreaking labor. Then the Torah says, but from the slave that you purchased at the time, le'olam bahem tavodu. So you and I would have probably read it like Rabbi Yishmael, that it means you're allowed to. It doesn't mean that you have to. But nonetheless, that is how Rabbi Akiva interprets. And now, it seems that Rabbi Yehuda here is adopting Rabbi Akiva's opinion that freeing a slave, that continuing to own a slave is not just an option, but it's a mitzvah, meaning you're not allowed to free the slave for nothing. So the Gemara says, how could Rabbi Eliezer free his slave in order to have a minion if you're violating a mitzvah of the Torah? Now, one of the interesting things here that this is whether or not, one of the questions that the Rishonim grapple with is whether or not this is a real drasha, or it's just an asmachta. I mean, is it really a din d'oraisa, you're not allowed to free your slave, or is it a rabbinic law, and they're just hanging on this pasuk? There are a number of Rishonim in Gittin, Masechet Gittin, who say that it's not really from the Torah, it's a rabbinic law, but it hangs on this pasuk. If you look in Tosus here, I'm not going to talk about it, read the Tosus, but Tosus asks a question, or draws a parallel to the situation of the following scenario. Supposing you have, this comes up, this is it's not a machlokas svarim Ashkenazim because the Ashkenazim won. Supposing a person dies on, someone's relative dies on, let's say, this year, the eighth day of Pesach. And let's say they were Satmer or Yeki, and they bury that day. Right? You can bury on Yom Tov Sheni. It is not the practice for most from Jews because we have refrigeration. We don't want to get into the business of burying on the second day of Yom Tov. But really, according to the Gemara, you can bury, and Jews can do it. If you have to dig a grave, a Jew can dig the grave, can do the burial. So the rule also happens to be that all avelus, all mourning, except for one case, according to all opinions, is only rabbinic in nature. It's only Midrabanan. The only situation where there is an opinion, it's the Sephardic opinion, as opposed to the Ashkenazi opinion, that the obligation of Avelus is from the Torah, is on the day, if a person was buried on the day that they die, that day after the burial, the laws of Avelus are scriptural, are Daraisa. That's a big debate. Now, why does it really matter? What difference does it make? It matters in the following case. Supposing on the last day of Yom Tov, the eighth day of Pesach in Manhattan, someone dies and gets buried that day. The question is, do you observe the laws of mourning on that day and ignore Yom Tov? I mean, there are aspects of mourning that you're not allowed to do on Yom Tov, but you ignore them because Yom Tov, the last day of Pesach, the eighth day of Pesach, outside of the land of Israel, obviously, is only rabbinic in nature. And therefore, perhaps the mitzvah of the Torah to observe Avelus overrides that, which is what many of the Rishonim many of the Sephardi Rishonim say. Now, the Ashkenazi Rishonim say no, that Avelus is, that all Avelus, anything after the burial, as opposed to Aninus, all Avelus is rabbinic in nature, and therefore, even if you bury the person on the eighth day of Pesach, where it's, even though the Avelus is, even though Yom Tov Sheni is only rabbinic, Avelus is also only rabbinic. But it's in this context, Tosus tries to draw an analogy about this last day of Yom Tov conflicting with whatever Avelus might be scriptural, Avelus, Aninus, before the burial. And Tosus draws a parallel to our situation, which means, and Tosus assumes that having a minyan is only rabbinic, the obligation. Certainly, the obligation of tefillah most of the time is only rabbinic. So certainly having 10 men for the minyan, for tefillah b'tzibur, is only rabbinic. So Tosus draws a parallel between the two, which suggests that he assumes that this drasha of le'olam bahem tavodu is real. It's not an asmachta. It's not this fake drasha. It's actually real, and it is a Torah prohibition. There are other Rishonim who disagree. Okay, anyway, so that's its own topic, but it raises certain questions. If you assume that the obligation is only rabbinic, it ameliorates some of the moral questions that one might raise in terms of the Torah. It's one thing if the Torah allows slavery, because that was the norm in a particular world, but it's another thing to mandate slavery. Then you have to. Then it becomes a greater challenge to grapple with. Okay. No. That's an Eved Ivri. That's an Eved Ivri who re-upped. You know, after. I mean, even if he didn't. I think even if he hasn't served 6 years, I think the Yovel will free him. But normally, the Torah mentions that in the context of the way Chazal understand is that if he re-upped, he got his ear pierced. Va'avadoli olam, he shall slave him olam, which Chazal understand means the olam of Yovel. Okay, so anyway, the Gemara says, how could Rabbi Eliezer do that? How could he free his Eved in order just to make a minyan? So the Gemara answers, Lidvar mitzvah shani was for mitzvah. So the Gemara immediately responds, what? Mitzvah baba veirahi. I have an idea. I'll rob a bank, then I'll give a lot of money to the shul. Okay, and so it's a big mitzvah. I'll give all the money I robbed the bank to the shul. I'll be like Robin Hood. So, what the? That's right. We'll give a raise to the executive director and the rabbis. Excellent. So that's ridiculous. Of course that's prohibited. You know, we don't allow, generally, there are situations where we have there are situations where there's a direct conflict between two obligations or two mitzvahs. So, for example, if I were wearing a four-cornered linen garment, so I'm supposed to put tzitzis on. But the problem is that tzitzis, the blue strings, the tchelis strings, have to be wool. If I put wool tzitzis on a linen garment, I'm wearing shatnez. So what do you do? So there's a conflict between the two. So the legal system has ways of working it out. But there's no conflict between robbing the bank and providing money to, you know, stock of money. Those two are not, they're not connected to one another, right? So they're not situations that we say, one is somehow, you know, we say when it comes to the tzitzis, we say that, asei dochalos asei, that really, by Torah law at least, I can wear the four-quarter garment, and then I can put the wool treles on it. I'm violating shatnez, and I'm enjoying wearing the shatnez because I'm fulfilling the mitzvah of tzitzis, and therefore I'm allowed to. The aseh of tzitzis pushes aside the los aseh of kelayim. We don't say that the aseh of tzedakah pushes aside the los aseh of lo tignov, the prohibition of theft. So the Gemara, we could have pointed that out earlier. We didn't really an hour piece, but let's say I need to eat matzah. And the only matzah available is tevel. It hasn't been tithed. Can I use that for the mitzvah? And the answer is, of course not. Now, it's a good question as to why. But the Gemara, the very same list of foods that you can't do Zeman for, you can't use those same type of foods for matzah. Meaning tevel, masa rishon, where they improperly separate the truma, etc. None of those can be used for eating matzah. Why not? Let's say it's the only thing I have, and I have no way of fixing it. I say, don't chalos, I say. The answer is no, we don't say that. Whatever reason. That's called a mitzvah baba beira. It's a good question as to why. But, so the Gemara says in this case, how could Rabbi Eliezer violate the assay just because he's doing a mitzvah? That's nice, but it's a mitzvah baba beira. So the Gemara answers, mitzvah derabim shani. Well, that's a great answer. Okay, so to rob a bank of $10,000 and give it to the shul, that, that's it. But to rob a bank of $1 million, that's a mitzvah. Now, so there actually are different versions here. Some have mitzvah the rabbim, some have mitzvah rabba. That the question would be better on mitzvah rabba. It's a big mitzvah, so it's got to be a lot.
It's a weird answer.
Yes, it's a weird answer. So I'm not going to dwell at length upon this. I don't know if I've ever spoken about this as a separate shiur, but this raises the question of when do the ends justify the means. Clearly I think we would say you can't steal money in order to give to the shul to give a donation. But let's say, can you go into someone's wallet to steal money to buy medication for someone who's dying, right? Or imminently dying.
Break into the pharmacy.
Right, right. In other words, on the surface, the...
Women, if they're
going to
kill everyone,
unless
he has
a right. So you're already going to the Gemara of Yael, which is where this discussion takes place. Generally speaking, Esther. Generally speaking, we start within the legal framework of talking about when you have clashes within the system, how are they resolved? So sometimes, as I gave the example of the tzitzis, the resolution is you can violate. You're not violating shatnez. Because the mitzvah of tzitzis pushes aside the shatnez. Right? There are any number of situations where we say that the system chooses between two principles. So, for example, and again, this is explicit in the Torah, a man may not marry or have relations with his brother's wife. But if his brother died without children, married to this woman, there is a mitzvah of yibum. Now, the Torah explicitly spells it out. So, in principle, there are conflicting... on the one hand, there's a mitzvah ibum. On the other hand, there's generally a prohibition of eshesach, a brother's wife. The mitzvah ibum says that the prohibition of eshesach is suspended in this particular case. So we have lots of cases. A person is dying on Shabbos. So can you pick up the phone? Can you drive to the hospital? The answer is yes, of course you can do that. Why? Because on the one hand, there's a preservation of life as a value. On the other hand, Shabbos is a value where they conflict. The halacha says you desecrate the Shabbos in order to save the person's life. But we don't always say that. What happens if a person puts a gun to someone's head and says, worship this Avodah Zarah, or I'm going to kill you? So the halacha there is that you give up your life. You choose to be a martyr. The same thing is true for Gilei Arayos, for adultery and incest, and for not to kill somebody else. So the question would be, what happens in a circumstance? There's this a Gemara about this. The Gemara, in a couple of places, talks about Ya'el Ishas Chever HaKeni. Ya'el, this is the story by Sisra. And although this is not the way we would have read the story, the Medrash reads the story with a very close attention to the text, even though it's not pshat, is that Ya'el, who's married, presumably, in order to be able to defeat Sisra, to kill him, she has to tire him out. So in the story, it just says, he asked her for a drink, she hit him under the tarp, he asked her for a drink, he gave him milk, and he fell asleep, and then she killed him. But in the Midrashic embellishment, she had sex multiple times with him in order to wear him out. So the Gemara asked, how could you do that? Now, presumably, the basis of the question is, Ya'el's a married woman, she's violating the prohibition of Eishes Ish, even if it's to save life. And her life wasn't endangered in this case. Even if it's to save life, we don't normally say it's permitted. Now, the ultimate answer of the Gemara describes this as a mitzvah, as an aveira lishma, which is one of those dangerous concepts within Judaism. So dangerous that some people like to deny its existence. Aveira lishma means the ends justify the means. When I put tzitzis on my, when I put tcheles, wool, on my linen garment, it's not an aveira lishma. It's not that the ends justify the means. The system says, in this case, I put on the tzitzis. That I opt for one mitzvah and I put aside the other mitzvah. But when the system says that you don't opt for that mitzvah, you have to observe the prohibition. But what if I decide that the ends, that the good that comes out of this is so great? So in Yael's case, presumably the calculation, as the Gemara sees it, is If Sisera had escaped, he would have gone home, raised another army, and attacked and endangered the Jewish people. So to save your own life, or to save one life with Gilui Arayos, that's one, that's prohibited. But if you're talking about protecting the entirety of the Jewish people, then maybe that would be okay. I'll give you the example. I'm sure ethicists have spoken about, we talked about this. Supposing this was 1923, and you had the opportunity to kill Hitler, who hadn't done anything yet to anybody, right? Would such a thing be permissible? Now, at some point, he became a rodent. But, pick your year. You know, when he was 13 years old, he wasn't a rodent. But let's say you had, you knew that this is what he was going to do. Right? Now, I think the answer to that question is, of course. But it's not an ethically simple question. When the angels argued to God, when Yishma was dying of thirst in the desert, and he cries to God, and the Medrash says that the angel said to God, do you know what his descendants are going to do to the Jewish people when the time of the first destruction of the first temple, when they go into exile? And God says, it says, Vayishma Elokim el kol na'ar ba'asher husham, that God judged him as he was now, not what would happen in the future. It's obviously ethically complicated issue. So this is a larger topic of Avera Lishma. It comes up in the actual medieval case where this is raised, and it's a really, I didn't share this at one point, but okay. I don't remember, maybe you don't remember, so you'll humor me and pretend you don't remember. What happens if a man's daughter was kidnapped and taken to a convent? This is a Shaila the Rosh Hashanah was asked. Can the father be Mechal al Shabbos to try to get her out? He had to travel to the bishop to get the bishop's order to tell him to release the girl from the convent. Now, if he doesn't do so, he may never get her back, and she may become a Christian, and that'll be the way she'll be for the rest of her life. So that was the question. And the rush now, on what grounds would you say that he's allowed to desecrate the Shabbos? There's no danger physically to her life. And the Rashba's rule, he talks about our Gemara and a couple of other Gemaras. The Gemara, one of the classic Gemaras, at least the Gemara's initial question, which it rejects, is supposing your friend puts a loaf in the oven on Shabbos. He forgets it's Shabbos, and he puts a loaf in the oven on Shabbos, and you can pull the loaf out, but there's a malacha de Rabbanon involved. It's something that you have to do to get it out, to get it off the oven. Should you violate the malacha de Rabbanon to save him from violating having desecrated Shabbos d'oraisa? So the Rashba talks about these cases. He ultimately rules no. He's not allowed to desecrate the Shabbos. There's no danger to life. Now, that is not how the Mechaber rules. The Mechaber rules that the father can do not only the rabbinic violations, even d'oraisa violations, in order to get his daughter out. And the way the rubric that it's usually understood is Avera Lishma, is that the number of Averas throughout her lifetime that his daughter will violate so greatly outweighs his desecrating Shabbos once now that the father should do that. There is one interpretation, the Taz, who suggests that this is danger to life. It's pikuach nefesh. Not physical danger to life, it's spiritual danger. But that's not the way we usually understand it. But this is, you have cases.
Desecrate one Shabbos so that you...
Correct. But it's along those lines. But usually we understand that is that we save your life physically so that you're capable of observing Shabbos. We don't normally say for kira purposes. It's okay, for me to drive somewhere to pick someone up and bring them to the shul because they're more likely, the chal of Shabbos achas. Kadesha Yishmar Shabbos Harbe, which was I'll call it a failed attempt, or it was one of the attempts, and how do you know you desecrate the Shabbos to save a person's life? You desecrate one Shabbos, so they'll keep many Shabboses, which, by the way, isn't always true anyway, even if the person is going to die during the week, but they'll live 3 days longer, you also desecrate the Shabbos. But I think the Taz does try to think along those lines, but that's usually for physical purposes, not spiritual purposes. I mean, a person who will be unable to observe the Shabbos because they're dead, that's when Mechal Shabbos. That they'll be unable to Mechal Shabbos because they will choose, I understand choice in quotes, not to observe the Shabbos, or choose to be Mechal Shabbos, that's not what the Gemara was thinking about. Okay. So anyway, apparently, and this is somewhat striking.
Rabbi.
Yes.
Do you have any Mari Mekomot on the... Sisera and Yael?
Yes, yes. But if you email me, I'm happy to send you Mekoros Rav Avera Lishma, including that Gemara.
Thank you.
Okay. So anyway, that seems to be the Gemara's answer here. Mitzvah de Rabbi Bishani. It's affecting the Tzibur, So therefore, in order to make the minyan, Rabbi Eliezer felt it not only was he willing to make the financial sacrifice, but he felt that it was appropriate and acceptable to free his eved in violation of the mitzvah of Le'olam Bahem Tavod.
Would this be considered a mitzvah lo taseh or bitul aseh to free the eved? And does that matter? Is it any mitzvah of Avera is the problem, whether you're not doing a positive commandment or you're transgressing a negative?
So I think the answer is I don't think it matters. This is what we call a lav haba mechlal aseh. It's a negative, it's a prohibition, but formulated in the positive a positive form. An example of this, which is both an aseh and a los aseh, is lanochri sashich, you shall take interest from a guy. The way most Rishonim understand it, except for the Rambam, it means that, it doesn't mean you have to take interest if you lend money to a non-Jew, it means to a non-Jew you may take interest by implication, but not a Jew. So they're both explicit losasing, but they all, when the Sifrei says lanachui sashich zo mitzvah asei, that's a positive commandment. Most Rishonim understand it. It's a negative commandment couched in positive language that to a Gentile, not to a Jew. It's not that you have to do it to a Gentile. So this is la'olam bahem tavodu would be the same thing. It would be that you shall work for them forever, which really means it's not that if you have to work your Eved hard. You know, if you don't mind your Eved lounging around the house, it's fine, but you can't free him, right? You can't free him. Okay. Yes.
In Bahar, where they have the talks about the Avodim, acquiring Avodim, Mei Hagoyim, Asher Shizvipo Seifem,
Mei Hagoyim.
The simple reason there is that the person is non-Jewish, is going to remain non-Jewish. There's nothing about converting there. And that's the kind of evidence that you have to, that you can't free. But our Avadim, they're being converted. They are Jewish. They're not going to
No. Sam, we can argue or not argue about what we think the Peshat and the Pesukim are. I'm only speaking about the rabbinic interpretation. Chazal's understanding of those Pesukim of acquiring Avadim, or their rules of requiring Avadim, to be converted, Chazal's understanding is, you buy an Eved Kanani, if he's not Jewish yet, then he has to convert. You have 12 months to convince him to convert, to do Mila and Tzvila. If he doesn't agree within that time, just one moment. Can I just ask whoever is sharing to please stop? Thank you. I know participants could share. I can't see anybody when I lose that. So Chazal understand that you buy an Eved Kanani, you have 12 months to get him to convert. If not, you have to sell him to a non-Jew. That's all.
Why is he called a Kanani after he converts? He's a Jew now. Why is he called a Kanani?
That's rabbinic nomenclature. Ironically, Sam, if he were truly a Kanani, you'd have to kill him. You couldn't save him. Right? You have to wipe the Torah states in the context of those. It's only from the nations who don't live in your land that you're allowed to have slaves, because the people of the land they had to exterminate. So again, you can, it's funny that we call him an Eved Kanani, because he's not a Kanani. If he were a Kanani, he wouldn't be an Eved. That's the terminology that Chazal used. An Eved Kanani for Chazal means a servant who is not, he's not an Eved Ivri, he's not fully Jewish, he doesn't have, even if he's male, he doesn't have the time-bound mitzvos. He's mostly Jewish, he's obligated in all negative commandments, etc., many of the positive ones, but he's mostly Jewish. He's mostly Jew.
So let it be like an Amma, a woman, a Jewish slave, who you do, who you can't keep forever, who has to be freed.
Sam, you're asking why Chazal read the way they do. I'm not exploring right.
The Chazal can't write everything in the Gemara. They're suggesting categories of thought to us. Why can't we continue the conversation and say, oh, thank you, these are the categories of thought, but we can extend the conversation. Why is it always frozen in time that this is what they did and they don't say anything about? They can't write everything. They rely on other generations to continue the conversation.
Okay.
Sam,
if we were doing Hilchos Avadim, if we were studying the laws of slavery, because that was our interest, okay, we could explore the question. First question is, why did Chazal read the way they do, and where they have a tradition? I think when you start to you know, when you start to read Chumash really carefully, you realize some of those Chazal were very, very good readers. So, but we can have that discussion, except we're not really exploring the laws of Avodah right now. All we're doing is talking about the larger question now of mitzvah of Avera or Avera Lishma. That's all. And even that's a sidebar to this. So I have to, as I'm learning this Gemara, I am working with the constructs that Chazal are working with to understand what it means in our context in terms of counting towards dominion, in terms of what things you're violating in order to accomplish what kinds of other things. That's all. We can have the discussion. But the bottom line is Chazal have two categories, they have three categories of slaves. You have an Eved Ivri, you have an Eved Kanani who's basically almost Jewish, who's Jewish, and then you have what's called an Eved Orel, but you can't keep him long term, meaning if he doesn't, if he's not Jewish, and if you don't, and if he doesn't agree to convert, after 12 months, you have to turn around and sell him to a non-Jew. By the way, interestingly enough, by that Eved, that type of an Eved, is one of the two scenarios in which asking someone not Jewish to do something for you on Shabbos is a Doraisa prohibition. There are two situations where Amira La'akum is not a rabbinic prohibition, but it's a scriptural prohibition. One is the Eved Orel. So an Eved Kanani and an Eved Ivri, there's obviously no prohibition of Amira because they're obligated to keep Shabbos. Nothing to do with you're asking them. But an Eved Orel, which generally shouldn't exist, is a Torah prohibition and a Ger Tosha. In those two situations, Amira La'akum is a Doraisa, is a Torah prohibition. But Chazal almost never deal with the Eved Orel. It's when on the rare occasions it comes up, they identify it as such. But when they talk about Eved Kanani, they mean someone who's Jewish, but he's not fully Jewish. He hasn't been freed. He's never been a free Jew yet. And that's what we're talking about in our Gemara. And Eved Ivri counts towards a minion. There are no questions. You can have a minion of 10 Eved Ivris. That would be just fine. Their status is no different. By Eved Kanani, what we've said is that you can count one towards the minion. That's what Yeshua ben Levi claimed. The Gemara challenged it based upon Rabbi Eliezer's story. And the answer the Gemara gave is Rabbi Eliezer was too short a minion. He freed one slave, and then he relied upon one slave. So once again, it was 9 plus one Eved. Okay, so now the Gemara continues. The Amar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, this should be a very uncontroversial statement, I think. La'olam yashkim adal la'beis ha'treses k'dei she'yizke v'yimone im asara harishon. A person should always try to get the shul so that they're one of the first 10 people there. She'afilu mea ba'im, let me correct that. They are one of the first 10 males above the age of 13 there. Even if 100 people show up later, he was number 10, or he was one of the first 10, then numbers 11 through 110 show up, he receives all of their schar. So the Gemara says, schar kulam, what do you mean? They take dominion, so they weren't one of the first 10. They don't get the schar, he takes it all away from them. The Gemara says, no. Ela ema noslim lo schar keneged kulam. He achieved as much schar for his making the minion as the other 100 did. Why? Because he was one of the people who made the minion. Everybody else is just the Tosefos. So the other 100 people are maybe fulfilling their own mitzvah, but they're not enabling the community to have something and wouldn't have had otherwise. Now, one could have this interesting question. What if minion is called for 9 o'clock? Maybe everybody who shows up by 9 should count towards the schar. I think this a little bit assumes that you're waiting for people to come, and finally the 10th person comes and you start. But what if? Oh, I see. Okay. I thought that was only with weddings. Well, but at the invitations. All right. So, and not all Ashkenazim. Hasidim also have a tradition. The expression about them is "Man zmanam zmanehem lo mashmala." Okay. All right, so now the Gemara says, next, Amar Rav Huna, Tisha v'aron mitzdarfin. If you have 9 people there, and then there's a holy ark, which presumably, because it has a Torah in it, you can now have a minion. Amar Leibra Nachman, v'aron gavrahu? Since when is the aron a man? So Ella Amrahu, no, okay, that's got it wrong. Tisha Nirin ka asara mitzdarfin. This is really interesting. If you have 9 people there, but you know, people aren't, they're not sitting, thought they were sitting in perfect chairs where you count the grid and the 9 people. There are 9 people milling around. So you look around, you know what you have to do a count, Hoshias Amefa, to be sure that there are 10 people there. So what happens if you have 9 people there, but it kind of looks like there are 10. So Rahuna says, that's good enough. It's kind of interesting. It looks like you have a minion. That's sufficient. So the Gemara then says, though, what does it mean? What does it mean that they should be? It's not any time there are nine people there. It has to be nine people that looks like ten. So the Gemara says, Amri la ki mechanfe, v'amri la ki mibadre. Some say that it's when they're very close together. When they're very close together, it's hard to count them because each time you're seeing, oh, you know, did I, you know, you count the person behind them, is that person behind them? Now you lose track of who you've counted. So some say that's called Tisha Nirim Kasar. Some say no, if they're scattered all throughout the shul, it's hard for your eyes to follow. Now what is clear is if they sit in a nice, neat little grid, you'll find that very quickly. When it's a tic-tac-toe board, you know there are only nine people there. But when they're not in such a shape, it's not as easy to tell they're only nine. So it's really kind of interesting. The halacha that I mentioned to you earlier, on which comes to the next page, of the distinction that how many people have to have had bread out of the minyan in order to make zimun. So I told you you need seven. Why do you need seven? So I mentioned the Gemara says it has to be ruba de mintara. It has to be a noticeable majority. So it's interesting because there, if what's required in order to make a zimun of ten, when using God's name, is you need a majority of the people to have eaten bread, well, I can count. Six is a majority. What difference does it make? But apparently, the majority is not insufficient. It has to look like it's a majority. So it seems that you have two halachos here, one which we do paskin like that, one we accept. We don't paskin like this for funas, where looks matter more than the substance. Interesting. Okay.
And the funas talks about a minion for Davin.
Probably, yeah.
So that's a very different opinion than Rabbi Eliezer, who freed his slave to make a minion.
Well, maybe by that point they had counted really carefully. Maybe they had counted really carefully, and there was no way to get away with it.
Yeah, we're in agreement.
Different.
Rabbi, I understand that I've heard this many times about counting the Aron, but it's not appropriate, is it? Really, it's...
The Gemara just rejected it. Reb Nachman said, reject it out of hand. He absolutely rejected it. We don't... There's more. We're going to get to the end. We have to wait till we get to the end, which we may not get to today. And then, so next time, next year, 2 weeks, we will then try to start to pull the pieces together. But there's a little bit more coming. So Amar Rav Nachman. Amar Rav Ami. Shnayim v'Shabbos mitzdarfin. If it's on Shabbos and you have two men there, so Shabbos... But yet you can make a zima. Now it's worth. And by the way, So it's obviously he's not talking about a minion for tefillah. He's talking about zimun. I have no idea what Rav Huna might have meant by Tisha B'Aron.
He's talking about zimun.
Why
is an Aron when you're davening? I think the
Kiddush
is that if you happen to
die... No, because the Sefer Torah might not have been there. The Sefer Torah might not have been there.
Yeah, but I mean, it's not
it's very common if they had to bring the Sefer Torah from somewhere else. So that doesn't surprise me. But it's possible, but then it means you sat down to what? Eat in the shul?
I think that's
exactly. Okay. Either way, the two is clearly a Zeman. The question is, why would that... So I have no idea why in our own... Again, the Gemara modifies... And it's going to modify in both cases... what they say. In the first case, we understand it perhaps a little more. In this case, both the original proposition and the modified one are still a little hard to understand. So let's read the whole thing. He says that two people in Shabbos are mitzdarif. So Amar Rav Nachman v'Shabbos gavrahu. So Ela Amar Rav Ami, no. Shnei Talmidei Chachamim ha-mechadidim zeh zeh b'halacha mitzdarfin. Two Talmidei Chachamim who are bonded, I'm going to choose that, who sharpen each other through their big back and forth in Torah, so they combine for a zimun. And then the Gemara says, it gives an example, Machavi Rechista Kegon and Rav Sheshes. Rav Chista would point to it and say, me and Rav Sheshes. And Rav Sheshes would point to it and say, Rav Sheshes Machavi Kegon and Rav Chista. They both saw each other that way. They were both, they benefited very much from each other's conversation. So what's going on here? Both of the Havamina, what he thought in the first place, and even the conclusion. How does that get you to a Zimun? So remember that I wonder whether or not there's a notion. Firstly, remember, there was an opinion in the Gemara that two people can make a zimun if they want. Although that, they can make a zimun optionally. Three people, zimun is mandatory. Three men eat bread, they must bench. And according to the men who show them, three women eat bread, they must make a zimun together. But two, there was an opinion that they can make a zimun, but it's optional. But that doesn't seem to be what they're talking about here. This sounds like it's mandatory. So what is the idea of zimun? So part of the idea, and we explored this in the last parak, and it comes up in the first mishnah as well, a shamish, right? The Gemara said that if you had a waiter who was a firm waiter, and he's eating as well while you're eating, the shamish can become part of the zimun. The Gemara said, well, yeah, why not? He's a Jewish male about the age of 13, eating bread, and he had a kazayis, he had enough that he's obligated to bench. Why would you think that the shamish, shachal kazayis, the waiter who ate kazayis, why would you think he can't combine to the zimun? So the Gemara said you would have thought he wasn't koveya, that he really wasn't part of your group. There was no kviya, there was no fixed eating here, and therefore he's just like an interloper, but only two people ate. So that's why the Mishnah has to tell you, no, he actually counts, he's considered combining for the zimun. So I'm wondering whether or not the idea of either on Shabbos, what's the nature of eating on Shabbos? Shabbos is obligatory. And therefore, maybe when two people join together to eat on Shabbos, that has a degree of kavios, of being fixed, set, and I don't know what a good word for it is. I know what the Hebrew word is. It's kavua. But it has a kind of, not permanence, but a kind of substance in half, that's already people combining to eat, and one person will make the bracha for both of them. And ditto for two people who are so bonded that they spend their life sharpening each other halacha, they combine. This is not just two disparate individuals who happen to be here. This is now a chabura. This is a group, even though it's only two, that has to do zima. Okay, we don't accept this either, bottom line, but that's what is suggested here. Okay, finally, Amar Rav Yochanan, Katan Poreach Mizamin Alav. This is not what you think it is.
Flying.
A katan who flies.
Yeah.
Okay, we don't have flying katanim. Rashi gives one interpretation. But I'm going to really focus on Tosis's interpretation. Tosis says that normally, in order for a man or a woman, a boy or a girl, to reach the age of halachic adulthood, they need two things. They need shanim and they need simonim. Shanim means they have to reach the requisite age, 12 years and one day for a girl, 13 years and one day for a boy. And simonim means you have to have the physical signs of puberty. Normally, what we work with, the Mishnah Nida has all sorts of signs, both for males and females, but one of the things that comes up throughout Shas is the idea of Shtei Saris. There should be at least two hairs, two pubic hairs, and Shtei Saros is almost a definite simon. Now, we usually assume, this is discussed, there are Gemaras that discuss this, we normally assume that to be a full-fledged Gadol or Gedola, you have to have shanim v'simanim. You need both. So Tosfos says here that a katan poreach is a katan who's reached the age of 13 in a day. But in order for shtei saros to count, in order for those hairs to count, they have to be a certain length. They have to be kibei lachof roshel likara, long enough that you could bend the hairs, long enough to bend so you can make the tip of the hair touch the root, touch the skin. That, by the way, is a shear in general. I know this. I don't want to be misquoted on saying this, but if a man is going to shave his beard with a razor blade, which is prohibited, he's much better off shaving every day than going a few days in between. Because if you shave every day, it's too short, it may not violate a Doraisa prohibition. Whereas once it grows to a certain length, where you could bend the hair around and it could touch the root, there you definitely violate the prohibition of tiglachas, of shaving with a razor. So again, we don't say that it's permissible even when you're clean shaven to shave the next day the stubble with a razor, but it's an issue that's discussed in poskim in whatever context because there is a difference between the two. So Tosa says that we're dealing here with a katan who has shtei saros, but they're not quite long enough. So it's poreach as almost like lusher of perach. It flowered, but it's not finished yet. In other words, the hairs have started to grow, but they're not long enough. So Rabbi Yochanan said that a katan who's poreach, who's reached that stage, so he's almost there, you can count him towards a zimun. Tani nami hachi, katan shehevi shtei saros mezamin alav, v'shelo hevi shtei saros e mezamin alav. Okay. That those two statements seem unobjectionable. If a katan became a gadol because he brought shtei saros, so you count him towards a zimun. If the katan doesn't have shtei saros yet, you can't count him towards a zimun. But then the braisa says, we're not so medaktik, we're not so careful about the katan. So the gemara says, haguf akasha. What does it mean, a medaktikim? Amris hevi shtei saros in lo hevi lo. You just said that if he has shtei saros, he's a gadol. If he doesn't, he's not. Then you turn around and say, but Eimidachtikim, it's not such a big deal. Lasuimai, what would that be telling you? Eimidachtikim mekatan. You don't have to be so particular, so careful. But you said he has to have Shnei Saros. The answer is, must be my love, Lasuimai katan parech. It must be a katan who's in that intermediate stage. Okay, now we'll stop here, but I want to just read one more half line. All of a sudden, the Gemara is going to say, V'les hilchasach kichohani shpaitza. Very much to our chagrin and disappointment, we don't pascha like any of these things. Mm. Now, the challenge that the Rishonim are going to face, and they're going to quote a statement, we'll see that in 2 weeks, and the challenge that the Rishonim are going to face is, what exactly is being rejected? Is every single thing from A to Z, presumably not the statement of, you should try to be one of the first 10 people in shul. Okay, that's not really a halachic statement, but that will be the question the Rishonim are going to be preoccupied with. What ultimately will be the Gemara's conclusion in terms of how it's going to be about a katan? When can a katan count towards zimun? So, again, for Ashkenazim, we never count a katan towards zimun. The Mechaber, as some Sfardim do this, will count a katan towards zimun once he reaches a certain age where he is sufficiently understanding of what he's doing. Okay. Any questions? I know there are a lot of questions, but any questions? We're not going to deal with in 2 weeks. All right.